Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the international break of the Calcio Land podcast. Shout out to our friends at Euro Fantasy Game. I'll be writing quite a few columns during this break to keep the Serie A flag going. So today, since it's Monday, we have our winners and losers. We have some great Twitter questions that we had received from last week, and we're going to end it with a superb interview with our friend Richard Hall, whom you can read on both Football Italia and Gentleman Ultra. But before we get to all that, joined by our great friend, co-host, producer, Alex Goldberg, the YouTube channel, the videos, the match recaps on Twitter are absolutely blowing up. Well done, Alex. So I have to ask you, we had the big game between Milan and Juve yesterday. Rather than leading you on with kind of one of my questions, I'm going to leave it open-ended and ask you, what were your main takeaways from the match?
All right, well, my first takeaway is the most obvious takeaway you could have. Juventus are just so much better than the rest of the pack. Now, I know Milan is not necessarily the best team to compare them to then come away with that takeaway, but it's a 2-0 win on the road, and the whole entire time, I just did not think at any point Juve were in danger of not getting all 3 points. But David, I want to go a little bit beyond that. I want to be a little biased. I want to have a little fun here. David, I am officially announcing, and I announce it on our Calcio Land account, Alexandro's back, folks. He is playing good football. Is he playing as good a football as he did two seasons ago? No, but he was one of the best defenders in the world that season. Flat out was one of the best defenders in the world, maybe the best left back that season, period. Okay, now he is playing good football once again. He had a really good game yesterday against Milan. It wasn't just his gorgeous peach of an assist to Mario Mandzukic. He had a very good game. He was really effective on the left-hand side. He had a high pass accuracy. He had 4 dribbles completed, 2 tackles. I mean, he was a very effective left back, and I really thought he did a really good job of shoring up that left-hand side against Milan. And by the way, this was not a good game from Suso. This was not a good game from Castillejo. This was not a good game from Hakan Çalhanoğlu. So I'd like to think that Alexandro played at least a small part in Suso, a right winger, not having a good game against, by the way, a left back in Alexandro. That is not a coincidence, in my opinion. But David, to just take it one step further, I know you have to take statistics with a grain of salt. I absolutely know that. I know that you can get into trouble when you just take statistics and form your opinions that way. But I do like statistics, and I like to see consistencies in statistics. So when you pull up Juventus's page on whoscored.com and you look at their top players, I want to ask you, does it sound accurate, their top 4 players? And I'm, of course, saying this because Alexandro is their 4th highest rated player, which is pretty impressive because he's a defender. Defenders usually need to be really good to get that high because they don't get goals and assists. The top 4 are Cristiano Ronaldo, sounds accurate. João Cancelo, sounds very accurate. He has been one of the best Serie A players, period, this season. Mario Mandzukic, who's having all of a sudden a very good season, 5 goals and 2 assists. And Alexandro. So it doesn't really sound that far off. Sure, once again, take statistics with a grain of salt. But if I tell you statistically Ronaldo, Cancelo, and Mandzukic and Sandro are the best players, that sounds pretty accurate. So I am announcing Alexandro is back. I don't even think last year he was abysmal, but he was nowhere near. He was nowhere near the Alexandro standard we know him to be. So I'm saying Juventus are a wagon. They're so complete, and they have by far the best fullback tandem there is in Cancelo and Sandro. But yes, Alexandro's back, David. That's my takeaway. What about you?
I liked what you said on Juve. You know, you never felt that they weren't going to win that match. You know, in a way, I feel like Juve under Allegri, and especially this season's like Floyd Mayweather in boxing. Like, yeah, it's boring, predictable, you know what's going to happen, but it's just so, so consistent. So when you said that, that's right when my mind went. And yeah, Alexandro was really quite good. Yesterday, you mentioned Suso, who was a one-man wrecking crew for Milan for a while. So fair shout out there. For me, though, the main takeaway is, not surprisingly, the man of the match in a lot of ways was Higuain. And look, this is a player I've written a lot about, someone that I loved watching play for Sarri. I felt when he arrived at Juve, you know, for him, the bar was so high considering Juve's track record. He had to deliver in the Champions League and for the most part didn't, never scored against Real Madrid and Barca, but, you know, did have some good moments there. And then he ends up at Milan in the circumstances that he did. And, you know, the thing that really stands out to me about Higuain, in a world where, you know, big name players, their image is so managed and they have to be so careful with their perception, I really appreciate Higuain's humanity, his imperfection. I think almost everyone expected him to probably miss that penalty when he took it. Kessié was ready to take it. Higuain intervened. I like the fact that he wanted to take it. And I think, you know, for Higuain, it just goes to show to me, I saw that much more as a great save by Szczesny. Was it a great penalty kick? No, but I thought that had more to do with Szczesny, who has a great track record with penalty kicks, and that fed completely into the narrative that Higuain's a big game choker. Of course, then he got the red card in the end. Gattuso and a lot of us have commented, you know, on how nervous Higuain appears in matches and how, you know, emotional he is. So I really appreciate the humanity and the imperfections in Higuain. I'm not sure if we'll ever quite have a player like this, because of how, you know, managed players' personas are. So he's a player that I'll definitely remember from this phase in Serie A's history. I don't know if there's been a better player in Serie A, except for Ronaldo now, since Higuain that season under Sarri. But I just don't know if people are going to remember that. A couple of other takeaways from the match. I tweeted this yesterday. I was like, I wish I could tweet this in a smaller font. But Bakayoko has actually been pretty decent for Milan recently. I thought he was their best player yesterday. Played pretty well in the Europa League. So he's been on a good roll. Milan really needs him, especially now with Bilia being out for a very long time. So if you want to take anything positive out of that match for Milan, I would take Bakayoko. The other thing that stood out to me is I think it's time for Laxal to start over Ricardo Rodriguez. I mean, I had heard a lot of hype on Ricardo Rodriguez when he arrived at Milan, and he was one of the best left backs in Europe. He was linked to all these big clubs, and he can play as a center back in a three-man defense. But I just never been that impressed. I'm a big Laxalt fan. I'd like to see more of him. Now, granted, he hasn't really played in a four-man defense, but I thought yesterday Ricardo Rodriguez got absolutely owned by Joao Cancelo, and granted, that happens to a lot of players. So let's see what happens there. Definitely an intriguing match. Juve in full Floyd Mayweather mode. Milan now losing makes that race for fourth that much more intriguing.
Absolutely. It certainly does. So, David, we do this every Monday. We had a very fun weekend of Serie A. Now, unfortunately, we're into an international break, but we got to do it. Who are winners and losers of episode 169 of the Calcioland podcast?
So let me take you back to last Friday night. We had Fiorentina traveling to Frosinone. I have as a winner Frosinone. They're on a four-game unbeaten streak. We had Pinamonte, highly rated Inter youth team product, with a golazo. So shout out to Frosinone. Always a great atmosphere for them at home. Very impressed with Parma. I have to say, we often talk about the up-and-coming managers in Serie A. I haven't mentioned yet Parma manager D'Aversa. Been doing really, really well his first time in Serie A. Parma, I fought against Torino. You know, they deservedly won there. They've done well against top teams. I got mocked for tweeting this, but, you know, we really got robbed of 2 years of Gervinho highlights with him going to China. And a lot of Premier League fans are like, dude, what does that say about Serie A? Well, look at the Champions League group stages. That's what Serie A is about. They're ahead of all the Premier League teams. Gervinho just has really strived in Serie A, and he was really terrific against Torino. Inglese, their other striker, played quite well as well. Another frequent person mentioned on the winners and losers spot, right wing back Lazzari. I've been very high on him since last season. Had two assists. We had goal by Petagna and Antinucci, two intriguing strikers on a provincial side. Speaking of strikers on provincial side, we had Pavoletti score once again off a header for Cagliari. Now, these are 19 goals off headers in the past 3 years, I believe, the most in the top five leagues in all of Europe. Pavoletti was selected to the Italian national team over Belotti. Very well deserved so far. Then for Roma, very impressive match by Lorenzo Pellegrini. Got off to a difficult start to the season. Juan Pastore got injured and he got moved further ahead. He's been sensational. Another goal by El Shaarawy, who I think has a good point for being disappointed he hasn't been on the Italian national team. He started frequently for Roma. And when you consider how much they invested in a lot of their attacking players, kudos to him, former Padova player. So he always gets some love on this podcast. We also had Iachini win his first match for Empoli after he replaced Andrea Zoli. Empoli striker Caputo has a great track record in Serie B. Quietly already has 6 goals in Serie A. We had Atalanta's brilliant win against Inter. We talked a lot about it with Richard Hall in the interview segment. They've won 4 in a row. That was really a great performance. That's the Atalanta, not just the scoreline, but that's the Atalanta we all really, really liked. And for Milan, we talked a lot about at the top. I thought huge winners yesterday are Milan's Curva Sud, the Ultras. Look, you know, we've talked a lot about the negative sides of Ultras, but yesterday you really saw the positive sign of Ultras. It's a great atmosphere at San Siro. The choreography before the game was fantastic. When they made fun of Bonucci, comparing him to Captain Schettino, for those of you that don't remember, it was that Italian cruise ship, and the captain jumped off the ship before everyone else, and they told him to get back the F up on the ship. It was a perfect analogy for Bonucci. And look, you know, it's all relative compared to the clubs you support. I think Milan fans have absolutely the right for being very upset with Bonucci, and I thought they played that perfectly. So I thought the Milan Curva Sud big winners. They also were very welcoming to Juve fans. There was a lot of the controversy on the ticket prices. Milan fans and Ultras are always very have a sporting side to them that I really appreciate. So there isn't just negative thing with Ultras, and you saw that yesterday. We briefly talked about Mandzukic. You mentioned it on the Alexandro Cross. A big game. Mandzukic scores. No surprise. Szczesny with that great save on the penalty. And look, Szczesny really needed this. I wrote about it for Euro Fantasy Game on Thursday. Between Buffon's great match for PSG, his less than stellar match against Manchester United, and now all the talk of Pirin potentially replacing him. So good for Szczesny. He really needed that match. I'm still a big believer in him. So let's get to the losers. I'm going to put as losers the trio Chiesa, Simeone, and Piaka, because their teammate midfielder Benassi has just as many goals as those three combined. So Chiesa's been good this season, but you know, not so much the scoring record. And Simeone and Piaka. Piaka showed some flashes against Frosinone, but I think Fiorentina expected a lot more from those. Flip side to Parma's great performance. That was really bad by Torino. Mazzarri hasn't gotten the most out of the team. Torino actually spent a good amount this summer to give him a good team. Last week, they win big against Sampdoria when he's disqualified and his assistant's running the team. So not good. Defender Izzo, who's usually quite good for Torino, he arrived from Genoa this summer. He had a stinker of a game against Gervinho. Let's get to the coaches that were sacked and almost sacked. Udinese is making a coaching change. Velasquez, who started the season as the youngest manager in Serie A, he's going to be replaced by almost certainly Davide Nicola, used to run Crotone. So Velasquez is a loser. After a pretty good start, Udinese has been really dreadful. Then we have Ventura, who wouldn't resign as Italy manager when he should have, and then abruptly resigns for Chievo. The president isn't even there. The sporting director was put in a very awkward position. He said they were going to try to talk Ventura out of it. Pellissier, their historic striker, absolutely trashed Ventura, saying that he wasn't into it the minute he arrived. So I thought there was really no way but up for Ventura at Chievo, but you got to hand it to him. He's actually found a way to worsen the way he's perceived. For Inter, I don't want to pick too much on Miranda, but he starts a match. They give up four goals. Seems like Father Time is catching up to him. When De Vrij and Skriniar are together, Inter just looks much better in defense. And the last loser is Sampdoria. They've given up a ton of goals since going into San Siro with the best defense in Serie A. Gave up three more to Roma beyond the goals. Like just a few weeks ago, they looked like maybe the potential queen of the mid-table teams. And they've come back down to earth. And someone who doesn't bring us back down to earth, but actually elevates the podcast consistently, are our listeners who send questions. So my apologies. Some of these have been in the chamber for a while because we didn't do a second podcast last week. So as always, you can send us questions on culture, movies, TV, music, transfers. That time of year is coming already. Using the Calcioland hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this one. Would Milan failing to qualify for the Champions League have an impact on the Higuain deal with Juventus?
So this question came in before the game yesterday. Now I'm also seeing tweets, Milanisti saying we need to get rid of Higuain. Like, that's just absurd. I mean, Higuain is one of the very few players, da Milan, players worthy of Milan on the squad. And look, there's very small chance that Milan doesn't redeem Higuain. This was a deal that was done on the loan with option to buy because of Milan's financial fair play situation. They couldn't spend because of the previous administration. This is really just an accounting deal. There was a lot of moving pieces in that deal. Bonucci, Caldara, the way Juve wrote out the press release, it was pretty obvious that they wanted to make sure the transactions were recorded a certain way in the books, both for them and Milan. So short of something completely shocking, I don't see this happening. Also, Juve and Milan have a great relationship. Who knows? Maybe there will be more deals as part of this, but I'd be very, very surprised. And I think Higuain, look, you know, he's already getting ripped enough. I think Milan fans need to maybe appreciate the fact that he is the best player they've had in quite some time.
All right, David, next Twitter question. What do you make of Inter and Milan agreeing to redevelop the San Siro?
Not the least bit surprised. I feel like, you know, every time there's talk of a new stadium, it's not surprising that it's been more on Milan's side because they've struggled more. I feel like that's always a talk after a tough loss, try to distract people, change the subject. There's always talk, oh, we'll do a new stadium. And then instead of talking of a defeat or something bad happening, people talk about that. There's been talk for a while that they were going to renovate San Siro. I still think it's a great place to play. It looks great on TV. It's fairly easy to get to in Milan. There are so many advantages to it. I think, you know, talk is cheap. In the end, the actions matter more. It definitely needs to be modernized a little bit. But I think, to me, that's still La Scala del Calcio. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't stay. Just make it better.
All right. How about this, David? Should Roma follow Napoli's footsteps and hire a world-class manager?
Yeah, I mean, look, Di Francesco's been very up and down. You know, it feels like a lot of times he saves his behind right before the international break and rights the ship. He's won two in a row, so I can feel pretty confident. But look, you know, I think Di Francesco's done pretty well, but the team's ahead of Roma have managers that you'd probably trust more. It really comes down to salary. Roma doesn't pay their managers particularly well. Di Francesco got a raise after the great run last year, but relatively speaking, compared to the top teams, he isn't very highly paid. But, you know, it really depends what Roma's game plan is moving forward. To me, it makes sense for them to take one step back, to take two forward and go with a young team. And I think you can do a lot worse than Di Francesco with that. If they wanted to try to win more now, maybe you look elsewhere. I mean, look, look at the impact Ancelotti's having at Napoli, but they're in a pretty different financial situation than Roma. Realistically, Roma still is in trouble financially. The other top teams in Serie A, for the most part, are in better shape. So it's kind of a difficult situation. But look, if you wanted to definitely improve the results on the pitch, bringing in someone like Conte would definitely make a difference.
All right. I would love to have Antonio Conte back in the fold. It just makes life more exciting. All right, David. Have Roma and Napoli made the most out of the window of time in which Inter and Milan have struggled?
It's a great question, and this goes back to something I often say. Unfortunately, only one team can win, and it so happens that these two clubs, had a very good run while there was a historically good Juve. So, yeah, on one hand, you can say, okay, Roma and Napoli, Inter and Milan in this decade have definitely struggled. Roma broke their club record for points twice. Napoli did last season. Not only did they break their own point record, like they got the most points of a runner-up. So I feel like everything they could control, they did. They just ran into, a really, really tough Juve. I do think, Napoli have solidified their financial situation. I think they've become much more of a destination club than they have in the past. I think they did take advantage of the fact that Inter and Milan were struggling to get maybe more attention as a Serie A club. So in a lot of ways, I would say Napoli maybe did a little bit better, although Roma had that deep run in the Champions League. So I think they did all they could. They just can't control how good this Juve has been in this period.
All right. David, this is a good one. Which underused players do you expect to blossom the rest of the season?
So I'm going to start with three players that have been injured. Conti at Milan, slowly getting ready to come back. He's been playing with the Primavera. I think Calabria has been more than adequate, but I think Conti's an upgrade over him. I'm very curious to see what he brings to the table. His former teammate Spinazzola is now at Juve. We know Allegri likes to rotate wing backs a lot, although De Sciglio has been kind of having a revival recently, so I'm curious to see how Spinazzola does. He can also play in the midfield where Juve is pretty weak. Speaking of former Atalanta players, we're still hoping Caldara doesn't have a lost season. Now with Musacchio hurt, it's even more thin at his role there. Then a couple of others, Cliver has been, showing some good flashes for Roma. It'll be interesting to see if he plays more regularly. Now we had Piaka, who I fought against Frosinone, was pretty good. We need to see more of him. We have Emre Can, who's going to come back from his thyroid condition pretty soon. But my top pick is Lautaro Martinez. I think he can be a really nice X factor for Inter. I'm a big Keita Balde guy, but I've been really disappointed with him so far. That's one guy that I'm not so sure Inter's going to end up redeeming the way he's going. Definitely not at that price, but I could see Lautaro Martinez getting more and more playing time. He's had a brought in a spark off the bench, and I'm curious to see if Spalletti finds ways for him to play with Icardi.
All right, David, what are the odds Eric Bailly leaves Manchester United to join AC Milan?
So this was a rumor that emerged last week. It was reported more from the UK side of things, and that really doesn't surprise me. It looks to me that this is definitely coming from the players' camp. He's not been playing under Mourinho. By the way, I'm a fan of that player. The few times that I saw him play, he impressed me. That seemed to me the timing of it, that rumor was coming from the players' camp. Maybe they saw that Milan had all these injuries at center back. But I just don't see him as a player that makes sense for Milan because he's a young center back, to build around long-term. And Milan already has two of those. Caldara, has barely played. Caldara played one game, but Milan really believes in him, and they have a Romagnoli, of course. So I don't know. That rumor seemed to me like I'm not saying it was made up. I have a feeling it came more from the players' camp. So I'd love to see him in Serie A. I just don't know if Milan's the right place for him. But I'd love to see him say on Roma or Napoli, a team like that. He'd be quite intriguing.
Yeah, I like him too. I think he's very impressive. In fact, I don't rate the other center backs on Manchester United, so I definitely think he's their best. Certainly rate him more than Chris Smalling and Phil Jones. All right, David, I hope you did some research or some thinking at least for this next question. Who is the best Bosman signing of the past 10 years in Serie A?
It's an easy answer. I think it's very hard not to say Andrea Pirlo, just because, you know, we talked about Bonucci wanting to shift the equilibrium in Serie A, and I think Pirlo did with that move to Juve. Granted, look, you know, Pirlo leaving isn't the main reason why Milan struggled after he left, but certainly didn't help. They were lacking a player like him for a long time. Obviously, at Juve was an incredibly important player. You know, everyone thought, a lot of, including me, I thought Pirlo was almost done, and he's my favorite player of the past 20 years when he arrived at Juve. He had an amazing revival, was a leader on the team. I think, you know, so much changed with him in the fold. I will say one that I think has the potential to be in line with that one is De Vrij at Inter. I've been so impressed with him, like, for a while, dating back to his time at Lazio. But when you look at the market for center backs, how it's, like, really, really changing, and De Vrij's in his prime. Like, Pirlo arrived at the end of his career. I could see De Vrij, like, this could really be a conversation very soon. So those are my top two.
All right. This is an interesting question. David, who are the best and worst owners in Serie A?
So we've got this question a few times, and I'm always, you know, when people ask me, I'm like, you know, well, what's the criteria here? Are we talking, you know, most colorful, the person that runs the team in the most logical sense? So the person left it pretty open-ended. So when I think of, you know, who gets the most out of their club situations, the two that stand out to me are De Laurentiis at Napoli. And I know, you know, if your club's interested in one of Napoli's players, how easy it is to hate him. But I really like that he makes it very hard for players to leave. If players leave, it's going to be on his own terms. And I think that clubs just run really, really well. De Laurentiis inherited that club in the third division when they went bankrupt. They are the team in Serie A that has the longest streak of appearances in Europe. So for me, he's definitely in the conversation. Same with Lotito at Lazio for a lot of the same reasons. Lazio is very financially stable. They have no real debt. They have a lot of good players. They sell really well. Like Napoli, they sell on their own terms. A couple of others, Percassi, the Percassi family at Atalanta, a club that's run incredibly well. Maybe you could almost say they maybe could spend a little bit more of the money they make on sales. But now they're working on their own stadium. Atalanta has an identity. They stuck with Gasperini through a tough time. Also shout out as far as colorful, Sampdoria president Ferrero for sure. But also that's a very well-run club. They discover a lot of young players, sell them for big profits, develop good relationships with other clubs in Serie A. So they've done quite well. I think Torino's president, Cairo, also deserves credit. Last summer, they actually spent a good amount. I have a pretty ambitious project. Maybe they haven't gotten great bang for their buck because of Mazzarri on the pitch, but they've done well. And also shout out to Roma president, Pallotta. He's put a lot of his own money in Rome. I think it's kind of a little bit of a thankless job for him over there sometimes. We know how great Roma's social media team is. But I think Pallotta's been an absolute net positive for Serie A. On the flip side, I don't want to pick on them too much, but the Pozzo family, who own Udinese and own Watford in the past few years, they don't seem that interested in Udinese. Udinese is basically what Atalanta is now, the queen of the provincial, great at discovering players. They have an identity with the way they play, but Udinese hasn't been that way for quite some time now. And I think Genoa's president Preziosi is having a very difficult season with his coaching situation. I think letting go of Ballardini was absolutely insane. They've really struggled since. So I don't know. I usually like Preziosi, but this has been a little bit rough.
All right, David, I like this next question. I'm interested to hear your answer. What are your favorite kits in Serie A this season?
So I'm curious to hear your thoughts, Alex, because you're really into this stuff and you're much younger and hip for me. So I'm going to give you a boring answer. I really like the classic old school kits. I think when you are Torino, Sampdoria, and Genoa, and you have beautiful jerseys like that, there's really no need to change them up. I think the Torino one, since Kappa has been their sponsor for jerseys, are absolutely beautiful. They've had a lot of cool second and third jerseys under there. Genoa and Sampdoria basically never change their jerseys every year. And why would they? They are classics. They're absolutely beautiful. Of kind of the newish ones, although they are tend to be pretty classic, are the Fiorentina ones. I have to say the new purple color that they have with the black shorts looks really, really sharp to me. I like what Puma has done with Milan for their first jersey. It's pretty nice. I'm not crazy about the new Lazio jersey with the eagle there. I thought last season the really classic, simple jersey was fantastic. To me, that was a downgrade. So those are mine. What about you, Alex? I know you're really into this stuff.
If I had to pick one kit, I would probably go, actually, I'm gonna do more of the modern thing that you just said I probably would do. I love Inter's third kit. And I really think overall Nike's third kits this year, the alternate kits for Nike are really sharp, in my opinion. I also really like Sampdoria's white kit this year with the line kind of more on the side. It's a really nice, clean, fresh look. Probably could like wear it out to dinner with a nice pair of jeans if you want to get all fancy. But my number one would probably be, I love Inter's third kit. It's got that kind of faded design into it, and I just think it's a real fresh look. So, David, our last Twitter question involves a former football player, but an NFL football player. How great would it be to see Chad Ochocinco practicing with Napoli?
This is an absolute home run. It needs to happen. Chad Ochocinco, formerly Chad Johnson, has been tweeting a lot about Napoli. For those of you now familiar with the NFL, he's been retired for a few years, right? But he's a very colorful player, very entertaining. I think it'd be a home run for Napoli for their branding to do that abroad. I know he was on the Patriots too, so you have an affinity to it. So I think it's an absolute no-brainer. What do you think about that, Alex?
I would love it. I would love it. The guy is so entertaining. I think he would just be great for the sport in terms of getting Serie A a little bit more popular in America. Certainly couldn't hurt. I mean, you mentioned he was on the Patriots. He had a cup of coffee and he was terrible. But hey, he's just such a polarizing character and such a fun guy to listen to. He honestly could bring in a few extra fans. And I just think it would be fun. I really do. I wish I was more of an avid fan when Steve Nash tried out with Inter Milan. But at the same time, Ochocinco is even more boisterous and even more loud. So I think it would be a home run.
Awesome. So I want to thank all the listeners that send questions. Again, sorry for not doing a second episode last week. We're going to make it up to you during international break. So keep sending them questions, transfer them to movies, Serie A, music, podcasting, journalism. Just use the CalcioLand hashtag. Also an opportunity to ask you to please leave us a review and promote the podcast. Alex and I put in a lot of work into the podcast. It's a free product, so we rely on you to help us grow. If you're listening to us on your iPhone, go to your podcast app, search CalcioLand, leave us a 5-star rating. Takes 5 seconds, really helps us. You want to leave a comment, we read them all. So we have a very cool interview coming later this week, but we have a great one today as well with our dear friend Richard Hall. We're going to go around Serie A with him. So for the interview part of the podcast, I'm thrilled to be joined by our great friend Richard Hall. For those of you not familiar with his work, shame on you. You should be following what he does. A lot of great stuff. He's a chief correspondent for Football Italia. He is the creator of one of my favorite websites, The Gentleman Ultra. If you guys ever see, if I do some shout-outs on Friday, they are always on the list and towards the top. Great site. We'll get into that towards the end of the interview. And The Gentleman Ultra is also part of the Guardian Sports Network. You can hear Richard on a lot of platforms because he is a calcio expert. So, Richard, welcome back to CalcioLand. It's a thrill to chat with you.
Hi, David. Always good to be back. And thank you for that intro. It's too kind.
Awesome. So, Richard, it's kind of hard to believe we are 12 games into Serie A, so almost a third of the season in already. We catch a little breath with the international break. So what I figured we'd do today was kind of take stock of the top teams with some questions I have ready. So let's start at the top of the standings. Juve beat Milan pretty decisively. yesterday. They've been on a really a big roll, except for two games this season. So as someone who knows Serie A really well, you also know historically the league well. Let me just ask you, though, of the Juventus you have seen in your life, in your lifetime, where do you rank this one? Is this one of the best? How do you kind of rate them?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because for me, they really are ranking up there. I mean, you know, I first started watching Italian football sort of really properly in the late 80s, you saw the highlights, early 90s. And those Milan teams, you can never really forget them. You can run through those teams and then think of Milan's unbeaten season, but realistically, there was always so much strength and so many challenges that you always thought there was a Juventus or maybe even Inter or someone else was going to challenge at some point. And the only other time I can think of it is when Inter under Mancini, and unfortunately Juventus, were relegated at that point, is all a scandal. And you always thought that Inter would be dominant when they took a lot of the stars. But again, Roma, got to think back to that time. You know, they weren't long off winning a Scudetto, and so they were very strong at that point. So, but when you look at the back-to-back doubles, the back-to-back championships, two Champions League finals, and since that glorious time in the 90s, now they have legitimately one of the best players in the world. It's hard to see Juventus not be one of the most dominant forces recently. And I think the biggest credit I can pay them in some respects is that I genuinely believe that Napoli, Roma, Inter have all, you know, upped their team, and Milan as well, up their standing, up their quality at least 5%, but Juve have gone 10.
Cool. So now let's talk about the other team we saw yesterday in the big match to end the Serie A weekend. We had Milan, who I felt, you know, considering the injuries, I thought put in a pretty good performance. But with Milan, a lot of times it feels like one step forward, one step back. So it's kind of hard to gauge. So Gattuso, there's been a lot of talk on him. How do you rate his work? Do you think he's done enough to at least be able to continue managing the team for the foreseeable future?
Gattuso is, you make a good point that it's been, you know, sometimes two steps forward, one step back, and sometimes the other way around as well. And the frustration with Gattuso is that a lot of people, including myself, got him wrong. You know, everyone thought he was going to be all blood and thunder, coming in like the old captain. And realistically, not having a strategy, a tactical now, so no one thought they would play good football. But the frustration for most people with this is that last season, against, especially I think it was Roma and Sampdoria, they really turned it on. We've seen it against Sassuolo this season. And so he can get this Milan side really playing. They're in a better situation with the ownership now as well. My only thoughts are that he isn't Elliot's man in that sense, and so there's that also puts a bit of a, you know, sort of Damocles over his head a little bit. But I just feel that with Gattuso, I don't think in modern football he will get the time. I think if he was given the time, he could improve it. But the way, you know, Milan, you'll know this, David, of course, Champions League's really, I can't stress how important that is for them this season.
Yeah,
and I just think that it's going to be very tough for him to see that through.
So now let's talk about Milan's crosstown rival, Inter, who, you know, go into the international break with a really tough loss for Atalanta. But I think, you know, the past 2 months for Inter have been, to me, a resounding success. I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment to one game. Atalanta has been more really on fire the past month or so. So tell me a little bit how you see this match, but more Inter, big picture-wise. Do you see this match as potentially the beginning of Inter unraveling, or is this just going to be like a small bump in the road and they get back on track?
Listen, you're 100% right. You've got to take this in isolation, because the performance on the weekend against Atalanta, firstly, Atalanta are incredible in that performance. The way they pressed, the way they kept the ball. It was like that Barcelona game had followed the way through at the first half. If it hadn't been for Handanovic, that game would have been 4-5-0 at halftime. It's, I think Inter looked tired and maybe underestimated Atalanta, which is their own fault. You can never underestimate going to Bergamo. But that was a mistake. I don't think that's something that will hamper Inter season. My concern, and some of my colleagues who also, you know, cover Inter a lot, were concerned about that when that run of facing, when they had the Derby, Milan, then they went into, I think it was the Barcelona game, Lazio, they looked like there was a run of games that could have seen them enter, as they did the previous season, sort of a winter of discontent where they didn't win up until January. When Inter have a collapse, it's an absolutely humongous collapse normally. So I can understand why the fans would be worried, but I think the work that's been done by Spalletti, the quality in the team, and the people like, even like Gemayo, who's coming back through now, that he's managing to get a tune out of, speak volumes. And for Inter to be back in the Champions League and in front of full crowds, for instance, I'm going to the game against Frosinone after the break, and I was absolutely shocked. In all my 11 years going out to Milan, it's nearly sold out. It's Frosinone.
Yeah.
So the fans are back. It's crazy. So I think Inter's on a good... If we take, as you said, that game in isolation is positive.
Yeah, I'm still a firm believer on Inter. Both Alex and I were very bullish on them going into the season. I see a very solid team. And I know a lot of people were tweeting at me, Roma, Napoli fans after that game. But, you know, I think this is more a matter of Atalanta really being on fire. So now let's talk about Napoli, who have been really, really good. As we got closer to the season, I was becoming more and more confident on them because of the quality of the team. But I was expecting a letdown because of what a great season they had without winning anything. But they really, really surprised me. So I know you've been following them closely. If you had to describe the main differences that you see in Ancelotti's Napoli compared to what we saw on the Sarri, what would those things be?
It's interesting because there's an element of calm about them for me. It's I was unsure. I've got so much time for Maurizio Sarri. The way he got those players playing last season, his style, his intensity, the press, everything, and the quality of that trident that he actually got working. It was interesting because I always thought that potentially his failing was not rotating the side enough. And then you had Ancelotti come in, where, you know, this guy's proven winner, but there was always the question of he's going from yin to yang in a sense, you know, coached within an inch of your life to get with Sarri, and potentially Ancelotti was going to be a lot more hands-off. I think what happened at Bayern potentially caused a few questions here. It did look like it was going from one extreme to the other. But what I find that he's managed to do is, in these big games, he's installed a mentality that they are a little calmer. They are a little bit more... professional is the wrong word, but it's... They're using his experience. Koulibaly was saying that in recent games at half time, what he's been saying has been absolutely influential, making him look at things differently. And so I think that could do them real justice. I think it's hard to repeat the season they had last season under Sarri, but I think in the next two or three seasons, I think Napoli could really develop into a serious threat, and I would expect them to win silverware somewhere.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I read on Gazzetta against Genoa was their fourth comeback win of the season. I mean, Sarri famously said in Serie A, you go down 2-0, the game's over. And granted, they didn't go down 2-0 in all these matches, but they've certainly shown a spunk to them that maybe on the Sarri, you know, when things were going great on the Sarri, everything was great, a little bit of adversity, maybe not so much. But I like what you're saying long-term. I see this a lot, kind of like at Juve, Conte took them from A to B, Allegri B to C, and, you know, I see a lot of parallels with Napoli. So speaking of Napoli, this is a question that I like to ask people a lot. This is a question Alex and I ponder a lot. Do you see a bigger gap between Juve and Napoli or between Napoli and Inter right now?
I think that is such a difficult question because I think my answer would be the gap between Juve and Napoli, but that doesn't mean that Napoli haven't, as we said, just they've come on leaps and bounds. As I said at the start of this interview, in the sense of I do believe that Milan have come on since last season, as I said about Inter and Napoli as well. So I think, David, I think I might actually be quoting yourself, who said, without Juventus, this would be an incredible title race. I think, I agree with that massively because, as I said before, every time anyone raises their game, Juventus do it twice as high. I mean, for instance, the reason that I would say it's Juventus, the gap's there because in other seasons, when we've seen the likes of Pogba, Tevez, Pirlo, the list goes on of players that Juve have lost, they've taken time to adapt. Allegri's just held back, and we've seen them start the season in third gear and then really kick in a bit like a freight train. This season, they're just trying to get this title wrapped up as soon as possible. So, and that's due to the Champions League and the obsession that is that. So for me, I think that Juventus have actually taken themselves onto the, justifiably into the European elite. And I am talking about competing with the likes of, you know, if you are going to use Man City as an example at the moment from the UK, if you are going to use, yeah. I better say Chelsea for Alex. but also as well, you know, the top teams like Bayern, Barcelona, Real Madrid. And I think with the decline in some of those clubs as well, the last three I've just mentioned, that maybe potentially, it puts them in another level really now.
Yeah, I completely agree there. And you know, too, it's not only that how the teams compete, but it would be such a great title race because of how different Napoli and Inter are. Like in a vacuum, it's a great race between those two. So I think most would agree that Juve, Napoli and Inter, you know, in whichever order you have them, are the three strongest teams in Serie A. Some of my Romanisti followers would disagree with that, but I'm going to say that I kind of see it that way. But for fourth place, we have quite an interesting race. So again, 12 games in, almost a third of the season in, we have Lazio 22 points, we have Milan 21, Roma 19, tied with Sassuolo, and a surging Atalanta at 18. So I'm going to kind of stop it there. Out of these teams, who, if you had to bet who will be fourth at the end of the season, who would you pick and why?
It's a really tough one because the instinct is to go with any team that's got Higuain. You would say he's going to guarantee 20-plus goals. That's what Milan have been missing. And therefore, automatically, with the, you know, the resurgence of Milan in some respects, you'd think them. But I'm going to go against that because, again, I could sit in a room with someone and argue, no, not argue, have a conversation with someone about the why Gattuso is a good coach, and also sit with someone and also go the other way. I'm so undecided. Whereas Roma and Di Francesco, I like them because I feel like he's building something. He has changed a lot because he's had to, because the players have gone out the door. But the likes, I'd like seeing Justin Kluivert come back from injury and look good. And when you talk about strikers, Edin Dzeko for me is still just incredible of what he does. People talk about Mauro Icardi all the time, but Dzeko, always, always impressive. Even to the point of, I have to say, one of the things I thought would be wrong with Roma was the goalkeeper. I thought Olsen was so far away from what they wanted. Not that he's a bad goalkeeper at all. He's a good, solid keeper, but it was everything else. He looked really poor playing out from the back. And instead, I think Roma have adapted. And I think it's Savoni, isn't it? The Roma goalkeeping coach. I think he is. If you're looking at any coach in the last five seasons, what he's done to the likes of Szczesny, Alisson, now Olsen. I mean, that guy is worth, I don't know how much you could put a price on him, because he seems to just bring out the best of the goalkeepers. And with Olsen improving as he is, I think Roma will grow into this season. And I'm going to put those as fourth.
Okay, you didn't mention Immobile and Lazio, but I'm sticking to my guns and I'm going with them. If I look at all the strikers you mentioned, he's the one I trust the most. Let's pivot to the Champions League. It's been a great season for Serie A clubs. As it stands now, and I have to double check so I don't say something outrageous, if the group stages were to end right now, all of the Serie A teams would go through in their groups. So give me kind of your big picture assessment on Serie A and the Champions League, and which team has impressed you the most and why?
Again, that is a really difficult question because it's hard to, you could argue any of them really in that sense. I mean, excuse me. I think that Napoli with that group, I mean, Belgrade, never, you know, an easy place. PSG, Liverpool, those are teams that, you know, if they can get through that group, Ancelotti's experience in the competition, you know, that if someone said Napoli semi-finals, I wouldn't blink at it. It wouldn't make me think that would be impossible. I can't say anything against Roma because you've heard what I think of the way they're improving, and yet they reached the semi-finals last year. So again, if Roma are in the semi-finals, it wouldn't surprise me. Inter, there's something about Champions League nights. you know, the Meazza went into play, and it seems to be that if they can get through a group that contains a very good Tottenham side, albeit tired looking at times, and that Barcelona side, you know, if they can go through, why not? You know, you look at the strength and depth they have got. They probably will potentially make a move or two, nothing major in the mercato. You'll know more than me. But again, you know, Inter could strengthen that. I think the only thing with Inter is it depends on that. We always think there is a chance that they can go and have that Pazza moment, as everyone says, and have a wobble. So that's the only thing about Inter. But Juve, for me, I mean, the only thing I would say about Juve is there going to be too much pressure on them for this, because everything is about this, isn't it, for the Champions League. It is the obsession. It is admitted by the club almost now that that's yep. here. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I actually think that loss to Manchester United might be a blessing in disguise. I mean, Juve is still in the driver's seat to win that group. I think they kind of maybe needed a slightly humbling moment in the Champions League. But you do make a good point. It's become such an obsession. And with Real Madrid and Bayern taking a step back this season, there's even more pressure on them. So, as always, you did a fantastic job giving us an overview on the top teams. So tell our listeners, you know, are there some Serie A players, maybe not on the top teams, that have stood out to you this season?
It's interesting. I quite like, I think that Lafont, the Fiorentina goalkeeper, I think he's going to be exceptional. I think you could look quite, there's quite a few players in that Fiorentina side that are looking pretty good. And on keeping on goalkeepers, whilst he's not on anyone's radar at all, I think he could be not one of the best, but a really solid goalkeeper is Ihnat Radu at Genoa. Got his chance on loan from Inter. I mean, he's made a few mistakes, but it's good that he's getting game time. And I think that he'll develop into a really good player. I know he's been one of the top teams, but one of my favourite players who started the season a little bit shaky, really coming on for me and will be a star, is Lorenzo Pellegrini. Really, really impressed with him. And I have to say that every time I watch Calgary's Barella play, I just think that when's he just going to get signed by one of the big clubs? Because his composure, I think there's so few midfielders in the game, even at some of the top clubs, that can change the pace and dictate the tempo of a game. And his ability to do that at a club like Calgary, admittedly, you can only normally do it against a smaller side, but it's a real ability. And I think he could really, really carry on and be an absolute star for the Azzurri as well.
Yeah, I agree. Both Pellegrini and Barella, Mancini is going to really need those guys to keep. Pellegrini has really been impressive since he moved more up front. So everyone got a sense of how great Richard is with this interview. If you hadn't heard him the previous times on Calcioland, this is par for the course. But he does run a genuinely fantastic website, Gentleman Ultra. What I like about it, this isn't, you know, what you get on a lot of other sites. You get a lot of history on Serie A. There are articles on Cerci, Totò Schillaci, Papin, a lot of great topics. So if you love calcio from back in the day and you want some nostalgia, great. If you're getting into calcio and you want to understand the history, this is a great place to go. So what else is going on at Gentleman Ultra, Richard, and how else would you describe it to someone who's not that familiar with your work?
I think that what we're trying to do at Gentleman Ultra is just something a little bit different, as you kind of mentioned. We've got some really fantastic writers where we don't tend to put deadlines in. We let people just enjoy writing the piece. So that's why sometimes we can have a flurry of activity and then sometimes it slows down. It's the same as a podcast. We keep saying we're going to do it more than once a month. But the fact is we prefer people to take the time, and people do tend to write about history, the ultra culture, you know, nostalgia, and we've just the odd stories that you don't always hear about Italy and Serie A. We cover a lot of foreigners who played in the league as well, and some really interesting stories there and some good research done. So there's going to be a lot more like that. There's going to be some controversial Serie A 11s of all time and the best goalkeepers of Serie A, which caused, we've had a few polls already that have been interested on that. So that's the site in its overview. And hopefully we are going to start looking in the new year to do a YouTube channel. And the first sort of showing of that will come out probably end of January, where Luka Hodges-Ramon, who's also he's just exceptional, worth a follow, and Neil Morris as well, who I can't speak any more highly of, we're all going out to Milan and going to try and get 3-4 games in and try and bring that experience, try and video a few things a bit different, just to what the stadiums are like, what it's like in with the ultras, where it's nice to eat and drink around there, just some more fun stuff. So we'll see how that takes off, and so that's us for really for the new year.
Awesome. Well, Richard, we had to take an episode off last week. You more than made up for our lack of content. Always a pleasure to chat with you. This is our first episode of the international break. We'll keep updating you guys, bringing you some Serie A doses, and this was a great way to start. So thanks, Richard, for joining us.
Cheers, guys. Always a pleasure. And you guys do some fantastic work. Keep it up, guys.